Welcome to the Hoopsite Podcast. My name is Alex Kennedy. We will continue posting new episodes of the podcast every Monday and Thursday despite the NBA stoppage. Fortunately, we can record and edit these from home, so keep checking back for new episodes. With the NBA season suspended, things are up in the air and people have questions about how this will impact the league going forward. Today, to help me make sense of it all, I'm joined by CBA and salary cap expert Eric Pincus, who writes for Bleacher Report and Basketball Insiders. He also helps run the Sports Business Classroom. Eric, thanks for joining me. How are you?
Doing well under the circumstances. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, these are crazy times, and obviously there's more things that are important than basketball right now, but we are a basketball website, a basketball podcast, so we want to talk about how this could impact the CBA, how it could impact the salary cap, and things like that, and no one better to talk to than you. You obviously know all this stuff. I feel like at this time, everyone's probably reaching out to you. I talked to Larry Kuhn last night as well. How many people have been reaching out to you recently to clarify things and ask you questions?
I mean, it's pretty common right now to get a lot of questions. I wish I had better answers or answers that were more clear, because we're in a real, I guess, area of uncertainty here. That's the best way to put it. This is uncharted territories. The CBA is going to be taxed. Portions that I've only kind of looked over in the past are now really important. Things that, I don't really need to know that well. I need to know stuff about trades and what, cap holds and all that stuff. This stuff, I'm definitely looking closely at to make sure I got it down firm.
Right. I mean, these are the parts of the CBA that they hope they'd never have to use, but fortunately, they did prepare. And I mean, it makes sense. A multi-billion dollar organization is going to consider everything possible and prepare themselves. So it is good that they have these certain sections of the CBA that apply to this kind of thing. For people that don't know, can you kind of talk about which parts of the CBA are the most relevant and that you're kind of paying attention to right now?
I mean, it's too vast to even, I mean, everything is really significant. Like everything that we're looking at here kind of needs a reevaluation. Like, what does it mean that the games that may, if there are no 82 games, what does it mean? What, et cetera, et cetera. Usually when there's a lockout, they have kind of specific instructions on how to deal with that first season that's shorter. Well, we don't really have that. And there are clauses that have to do with, disasters and whatnot. And what does it mean? So really, there's that term force majeure. I think that's how you pronounce it. If I'm pronouncing it incorrectly, I apologize. But really we're talking about the section. If you want to know technically, where are we? We're in section article XXXIX 39.
That's my favorite section.
That's where it talks about termination, right? So, there's a section here, number 5, that talks about, I think this is where people are looking, section 5, part B, where it says if games are canceled, what happens? And each player is reduced 1/92.6th of their season salary. So for someone like LeBron James, that's about $400,000. And it looks like, the way I read it, is that it'll be for every game that's canceled over the 82 games season, whatever's canceled, each team, whatever. And then each team will also, it looks like, be, each player will be docked 5.6 playoff games, it looks like, across the board. I'd want to talk to someone because there are teams who aren't making the playoffs. And, of course, some teams that would make the playoffs would play more than 5 or 6 games. So
right.
I think what they did is they just averaged it out across the entire league. So I don't know what, we could say, oh, that's not fair, whatever. At this point, it's, I don't think anything in this world right now with what we're going through is particularly fair.
That's a good point. Okay, so I'm interested in how the salary cap and luxury tax will be affected. If the NBA can't resume the season or only play an abbreviated schedule, or if they're even playing just in front of, no fans, if it's an empty arena, then, any reduction to the basketball-related income would directly impact next year's salary cap and luxury tax. I know people have estimated it could be $500 million. I think Bobby Marks threw that number out there, depending on what happens. If there's a cancellation, it's different than if they come back and only play the playoffs or whatever. But, when you're looking at this and trying to project, will we see the salary cap and luxury tax be greatly affected by this?
The answer is yes, but it's also kind of an asterisk in that there are rules, and we can look at this document and kind of dissect it. But the reality is that the league and the players union can rewrite any of this if they agree. So unilaterally, neither can do either, right? Like that, you can't. The NBA can't change the rules. The union can't change the rules, but together, they can. So like the NBA has certain power. For instance, as we talked about, they could dock players for money that for games canceled, and there are different mechanisms on how the salary cap. And we'll talk a little bit about how the salary cap would be impacted organically, but the players and the union can agree to anything, and they could change how things work. They could just come up with something creative that solves. I guess the way to look at it would be cap smoothing, except downward, right? Prevent it from going downward. And if you remember back in 2016 when they negotiated the 2017 CBA, Michelle Roberts, who runs the union and has really, in a lot of ways, done a great job, did not accept the owner's proposal of cap smoothing, which right. prevented the cap from jumping up. So in 2016, like when they had the TV kick in, the TV revenue kick in, it went up $24 million. And it resulted in a lot of money the teams were essentially required to spend because you have to spend up to at least 90% of that cap. And so there weren't that many free agents that were worth that money. And it didn't really impact, by and large, players that were under contract. It did in a small way, but by and large, it didn't impact most players. So only the players who were free agents got paid. So you had your Mozgovs and your Joakim Noah and Jan Mahinmi and Bismack Biyombo and Luol Deng, and we can go on and on. Guys who got gigantic contracts that were paid like star players when they were role players. And Michelle Roberts has come out multiple times since saying that she didn't believe in that, in cap smoothing. Don't blame me for what happened with Kevin Durant and the Warriors, et cetera. I don't know if she said that explicitly, but that's the idea. Right. And she's kind of doubled and tripled and quadrupled down on it. But we're kind of looking at now at a place where cap smoothing is almost guaranteed to be necessary in some fashion or another to prevent the salary cap from dropping too significantly. And we'll see if her point of view on that changes. And like I said, I don't want to pile on her, and she's done a lot right. It's just this is an area I don't agree with her, and I think it threw the NBA out of whack, and it's really the main reason why the Warriors became what they became with KD, which is fine, and I know Warrior fans are happy. My father and his wife live up in the Bay Area, and they're thrilled, so I don't want to take that away from them. But there's a lot of people around the league, owners, GMs, other people around the league who believe that that mistake is why the Warriors were what they were and why it became so lopsided. So there's a lot to it. I mean, I don't know exactly where the answer is going to be, but whatever the answer is, they can renegotiate all the rules.
Right. So if you're a team right now, you know, I talked to a number of agents. We're doing an article where I talk to different agents about how they're kind of handling this and the conversations they're having with the union, the conversations they're having with their players. And a lot of the agents are basically saying, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, we can try to guess, we can try to predict, but no one really knows what's happening. We're waiting on this to get resolved, and then we're going to start getting answers. But there's a lot of stuff that's up in the air. And usually, you know, the agents, the executives, and people like yourself, you have all the answers because you guys are super informed and know the CBA front to back. In this situation, there is a lot that's still up in the air, and there's a lot of uncertainty. But if you're a team that either has a huge payroll or a team that was expecting to, you know, go out and be really active in free agency this summer, how is that impacted? You know, how will we see, you know, the salary cap, let's say it does decrease, even if there's cap smoothing, how would that be impacted and impact what teams are trying to do?
I mean, it's so broad. Everything is so broad. And the reason why things are so hard to answer are on a few levels. So number one, we don't know the practical impact yet financially, how much money gets lost in this process. So for one, do they finish the season without canceling any games, without fans? And you mentioned Bobby Marks estimated $500 million. I think that's conservative. I was closer to $800 million. But again, that's my opinion. And we don't have enough information. And he may be talking to people who are estimating, and his number might be right. But I could map out a path where if things got crazy enough, you could lose up to $1.2 billion, right? Like I could make that argument. I think that's extreme. But The range I'm giving is 800 to 1.2. So even if it was, here's an example of what 1.2 billion would do to the cap. You divide that in half because roughly the players get roughly half. That's 600 million. Divide that by the number of teams, 30. And now the cap is dropping 20 million. So it's dropping from what's projected to be 115 million to 95 million, which dramatically reduces what the max salaries are. So someone like Ben Simmons and Jamal Murray, who have taken extensions that list as max, would get their contracts would be cut dramatically. All the exceptions would drop. The cap level would drop. Then the ability to, like, teams would, by and large, teams that are counting on a $115 million cap, most of these teams are now in the tax. So what happens then? And so, you know, it's this cascading thing. If games are canceled outright, that's another factor, right? And so let's say the season's just done and we never get to the point where the season's complete. I mean, is that $2 billion? If it's 2.4, just to make it a round number, now it's a $40 million hit on the cap. So now you're dropping from 115 to 75 million. Now everybody's in the tax. Anybody spends any of the bigger exceptions, they're facing a hard cap, and they're probably over that hard cap amount. So the most everyone can spend is probably going to be, gosh, in the neighborhood of $3 or $4 million, and that's it. Outside of keeping your own free agents, but then they're going to be very expensive because they're going to put you into massive tax. So you have all these problems. So we don't know how much money is lost. And then the other aspect that makes it so hard to answer this is that, the union and the league can rewrite the rules. So it doesn't matter how well I know the document. If they change the rules, then what I know doesn't matter. And as an example, I'll talk about Nene, who signed a contract with the Rockets this summer. The intention in the contract, and I've spoken to people both with the union, the league, and actually with the Rockets. So I've spoken to everybody on some level. Not necessarily, I didn't speak to Nene or his agent or anything. But the idea was he was being signed as a trade asset, and they did trade him. It had incentives, and the idea was he was only guaranteed to make about 2.6, which is the minimum, but that he could make as much as $10 million. But the way they structured it with incentives, the way they did the incentives, it was actually a cap hit of $10 million. It was a very creative contract. It was very clearly circumvention of trying to get around the rules, but technically it was legal. And so the league said, no, we're not going to allow this. This isn't the spirit of the rule. And they went to the players union, and the union agreed with them. And that's the key. The union could have fought it. They could have gone to some sort of level of deep debate and fight, and they could have stood up and said no. But let's be honest, the contract was not $10 million. Nene was not worth $10 million. In fact, he got hurt and didn't even play all season, so the $10 million wasn't realistic. And so the union, you know, wisely so, I think, said, okay, this is out of bounds of we're not going to fight this. So they both agreed, the union and the league, to change how incentives in this case apply and how they work in trade. And it's basically opposite of what are as written. They basically rewrote it, changed how it worked. It only applies to Nene, although it would serve as precedent if someone else tried to do this again. And so he was traded, and he was only counted for $2.6 million instead of 10, which the rules say he would be 10. And it's just an example of, I can know everything that there is to know, and certainly I don't. There's always areas of the CBA I'm learning, and as things happen, you study and grow from it. But it's like a living organism to a certain extent, where it changes, and it can change. And the league will rule, and the players' union, if they are needed, if it's a rule change, if there's a gray area where it's a rule that's vague, the league will rule on it. A lot of times they'll involve the union and reach agreement on it, but sometimes the NBA will rule it one way without the union. But in these kind of extenuating circumstances, to really rewrite things, they need to do it together. And because we're talking about so much money lost, potentially, half of that has to hit the players, just based on how the system works. And even if they do rewrite how the rule is applied, ultimately that split is probably going to remain fixed. It's probably going to hit the players 50% roughly of what it hits the league itself. So they have the ability to fix that to a degree, but it is going to hit the players. And so how it hits, we'll see. But ultimately, the players have major incentive to try to come up with a solution that works to get these games played. Fans or no. Obviously, fans would be ideal, mostly because it would mean that the world is safer and this virus threat is diminished to the point where we can have mass gatherings. I don't think it's realistic anytime soon, and certainly not before July. I think we're at least 3 months for having any shot of that. And even then, I think it's probably unrealistic. But let's say they do games without fans. That's very workable. You can salvage some of the money lost. And everyone will be hurt by it, but I think they'll still need some level of cap smoothing or some sort of mechanism that goes beyond our knowledge, the experts, so-called experts, of how it is to what they deem is right. And I think they'll work diligently to solve this problem together.
Right. I think if there was a big drop in the salary cap, I think everything would probably be rewritten. They would agree, okay, we need to change the hard cap. We need to change certain things because it won't work otherwise. Things are just too crazy. So it is interesting that they can rewrite everything. One thing that you and I talked about just over text in recent days was I feel like both sides, they want to work together. And, you know, we talked about there's possibilities here. You know, the force majeure event, technically, the owners have the ability to terminate the CBA in the next 60 days. You know, the players could put up a fight, but it seems like everyone wants to, you know, no one's going to, I don't think anyone really wants this to turn into an ugly situation. I think they want to work together. They seem like they don't want to make any crazy decisions here and, you know, try to negotiate or anything. It seems like they want to work together to have the season if they can have it and minimize any kind of blowback, I guess, if things were to drop. Would you agree that a lot of the things being discussed, like possibly terminating the CBA or rewriting the CBA, that's kind of a worst case scenario that we probably won't see or we hopefully won't see?
Well, I think the rewriting thing is more of like, consider it like an amendment. Really, it's like a side letter of agreement between the union and the league, and I think we're almost guaranteed to get one of those that breaks down explicitly how to handle this situation. But it would only apply to this situation, and maybe it would be used as precedent in case of some future situation. But as far as actual rewrite of the document itself, like technically they can do that. They could change things outright, but that's far more uncommon, even in the most extreme circumstances. Usually a side letter, if you want to call it an amendment. But the league, if they wanted to, I guess if you go back to 2011 when we did have the lockout and the league teams were losing money in a big way because of primarily because of the Lakers and their TV deal with at the time Time Warner Cable, which is now Spectrum. It was so much money that it raised the cap for the entire league because local revenues raised, that goes into the basketball-related income. Even though it's local, it's not shared at the time. The revenue sharing was even less than it is now. They've since fixed that to a degree, but they also fixed the salary cap and changed the rules, the CBA, how things work. And a lot of that was in 2011, but because of the Lakers, other teams had to spend like $20 million more. I'm just throwing out a number, but in that ballpark, than they had in the past, and their revenues weren't climbing by that amount accordingly. And so there were a lot of teams in the red. The problem was more or less solved in 2011, and it had to do with revenue sharing and how the player share dropped significantly and the rules changed, et cetera. If we were in that environment now, let's say it was like that today, then the NBA would probably use this as an opportunity to rip things up, start from scratch. And even if that meant that the union decertifies and they do like a antitrust, you know, all of the gambles of going the direction of ripping up the CBA would be worth it because at the time the NBA was not in a healthy place. But since that agreement and then the subsequent one in 2017, the NBA has been healthy. And so I don't think we're in a bad place. You know, people talk about revenues have dropped a bit, or at least TV view ratings have, and there are a lot of extenuating circumstances, obviously what happened with China with Daryl Morey's statement. But by and large, the NBA is in a healthy place outside of the crisis that we're in. So I don't see any compelling reason why they would rip it all up. We have to at least consider it a possibility. And it's something that could happen. But I just don't see the motivation. I think everybody is in more or less in a good place. The idea of starting a new CBA negotiation right now or on the heels of this crisis is probably in bad taste. And I just don't see enough motivation to do it. But they, you know, if TV revenues drop enough, they can do it. If games are canceled, which they haven't been canceled, but if the NBA does decide that they need to be canceled, then we could start getting into that part where of the CBA that we cited earlier, where they could start docking players' salary, and technically the players would get the rest of their checks minus the docking, and then in theory, if it's not enough, it has to come back out of the players' pockets where they have to go and pay back money they already earned. So it's like a total nightmare. Hopefully it won't come to anything like this. I think the NBA is primarily in a good place. I don't think there's enough reason at this point to rip this thing up.
Yeah, that's how I feel too. I feel like that's a worst case scenario and no one wants that. I feel like both sides want to work together to have labor peace, and you know, we don't need a lockout on top of everything else that's going on where people are disagreeing over certain parts of the CBA and all of that. That would just be an even bigger mess. So that's kind of what I was thinking. If this is one question that we've been talking about recently on our Hoopsite Slack. If there are incentives in a player's contract and let's say the season is canceled or they come back and they go right to the playoffs, just players that haven't hit their benchmarks for incentives, they just wouldn't get that pay, correct?
Again, I think there's probably going to be some sort of resolution on that because like for some of them might be, gosh, I mean, incentives might be a certain number of games played or certain number of rebounds, for instance, or whatever. And if a player is on pace for those and now they can't reach it, even though they would have,
yeah,
does that make sense?
It's not their fault.
You know, right. And but I'm kind of loosely, I'd have to like look up each, you know, contract by contract and kind of get a sense for who would be impacted and how, and some wouldn't be because maybe it's an average. You know, you have to average a certain amount of points or whatever it is, average certain rebounding rate or whatever. But it's just another variable. Like everything needs to be looked at. It's extremely detailed. And the NBA has several high-level executives, you know, attorneys, whatever, that all they do is work on these sort of issues. So they have the manpower for it. Obviously, everyone's probably working on some level from home at this point. But beyond this crisis and life getting back to normal, they'll be able to go through and look at it case by case. These are definitely issues that the union is going to want to address in detail and make sure that everybody who is potentially impacted on it is impacted fairly. It just doesn't make sense to just, you know, for players not to earn income that they would have made otherwise because of this crisis. It doesn't make any sense, but everything might be reduced in some fashion or another because of what we're dealing with. The loss of income is going to hit the players. But I think the union and probably the league would want it to hit fairly so that people get what they're supposed to get in proportion. And then if everybody is taking a hit, maybe escrow next year is 20 or 30% and everybody gets 30% of their salaries. Everything acts as normal. The salary cap has only dropped a small amount, but there's like a 30% escrow. And so players are getting 70% of their money, but it's not really impacting what the teams are playing. The money's just coming back to the league and then back to the teams in different ways. That's, you know, we could brainstorm ideas on how to solve this. I would love to get, like you said, Larry Kuhn, and we can get Bobby Marks and maybe a whole bunch of people together, and we could sit around and try to solve all these problems for the league and see what the best answer is. You know, I'm sure there's 100 different paths. I can just come up with a couple just off the top of my head.
Well, that was my next question for you. Obviously, you're more familiar with all this stuff than I am. I'm asking a lot of the basic questions, but as you've been kind of looking through this, what are some of the biggest questions that you have? Things that you're wondering, I wonder how they're going to resolve that. Are there any things that kind of stand out that you've been considering recently that maybe, you know, you've been questioning?
I mean, the biggest question, like, so for instance, the CDC recommended, and again, it's a recommendation, but it's not a law, that gatherings of no more than 50 people come together. So can you get a game together without fans that have fewer than 50 people. Now, they don't necessarily have to abide by that, but if that was something that was asserted more firmly by the government, or if they wanted to stick to that, I mean, can you even get to that? Because you have 15 players on a team, you have coaches, trainers, you have the stats table,
arena
referees.
Workers. Yeah.
Right. Well,
not like all the arena workers, but some of the essential ones, maybe.
You're going to have, yeah, I mean, you're going to have some people, like, you need security. Every so often there's a fight in basketball. You would think that, hope around this time that there wouldn't, but there is a certain level of security. There are the camera crews, there's the broadcast, and, you know, we could say, okay, the broadcast has to, they're not in the building. They're watching it from a feed, or which, you know, it has been done before. For instance, the Lakers went to China, and their local broadcast of McDonald and Stu Lance, Bill McDonald, they went to the studio and they called the game from the studio instead of going out to China. Maybe the inactive players aren't on the bench. Maybe the coach only gets one assistant for that game. You know, the PA announcer, unfortunately, gets scrapped, even though it says in the rules that it has to be announced who got the fouls, et cetera, so they can keep track of how many fouls players have. There are rules that can be abridged and amended, and give the assistant coach an iPad or something like that to keep track of the stats so that they know how many players have, you know, what players have fouls, et cetera. Can you get it to under that number? So, you know, there's a million questions. You know, where's how much money is actually going to be lost? How do you recoup it? What happens to the draft? What happens to summer league? What happens to free agency? We can go down the line. I mean, we can end up with a fall league, I guess, instead of summer league. And that is the Thomas and Mack Arena available,
right,
when that happens? You know, like, what happens to Sports Business Classroom, which is something I teach every summer league with Larry Kuhn? That's, you know, all these, if this is canceled, it hits me in the pocket, just like it's everybody's being impacted financially. So there's CBA questions, there's life questions. Obviously, we want everyone to get through this healthy. I want the fans in the building as much as possible, but that might not happen. You know, there's much bigger concerns that I have beyond basketball. But, you know, as you said to start the interview, this is a, you know, this is my job. This is a basketball podcast. I'm tasked with writing about these things and addressing these things. So they are important to us. In the big scheme, they're not the most important thing, but there's just too many questions. I do expect the union and the league to work closely together to make this work. But my biggest question is Michelle Roberts going to accept caps moving in some fashion or another now that it's protecting her players' interests? When in the past, it probably was protecting their interests. She just didn't see it that way. And again, I don't want to pile on her. She's done a good job in a lot of other ways. And the union has done a good job. I think it's much... in the days of David Stern, Billy Hunter, I think we're very contentious, and the information did not flow very well. I think we're in a much better place right now, except for the whole fact that the NBA doesn't exist temporarily.
Yeah, there's that. are you guys still doing Sports Business Classroom? Because we have the basketball 101 thing that, you know, you and Larry both come speak at in the last few years. That's kind of up in the air right now. We haven't really made a decision one way or the other. We don't know if the Pro Basketball Combine, which hosts us, is even happening. So are you guys kind of just in a holding pattern, or have you made a decision yet?
Well, I mean, there's no sense yet on what's going to happen, but what it sounds like is that the best case is that we get back to playing games in June, maybe. I mean, maybe best case May. If somehow the NBA is able to prove that it's safe for players to play, because, like, for instance, the Lakers were just tested and are going into quarantine. But from what I understand, only the players were tested and not the staff around the team. So that's kind of a problem, right? So
right. How
do you get games going now you have to test the full staffs? So many people need to be tested, and it's kind of becomes like a moral quandary where there are sick people who can't be tested, or people who believe that they are exposed who can't be tested. And now you're going to, for a luxury of playing the sport, which happens to be, you know, an $8 billion industry, there are some moral questions as to whether or not they there should be a priority where all of these tests happen, because you're not just fine. You want to test all the players. I have no problem. You know, we could debate whether that's right or wrong. But now it becomes hundreds of tests across the league. And where, you know, we talked about fair a little bit earlier, is that, you know, where is it fair that they're getting these tests and other people aren't? So I simply don't have the capacity to answer the right or wrong of this. So, you know, we talk about summer league. If all of this is delayed until the world is a little bit more stable, where there are more tests, where it's easier to get all this done, fine. But I don't think that's going to happen in March. And I don't think we're going to reach that stability point in early April. You know, maybe hopefully in a month's time or later, things will be more stable and somehow tests will be so prevalent that everyone can get them at a drop of a hat. And that would be great. But I don't know if that's going to happen. And if it takes until the summer league is pushed back, then it becomes, like I said, like arena availability, personnel availability, so many factors that we just can't even begin to guess right now.
Right. You know, I had the same conversation with Chris Haynes. He was in the podcast and was saying, you know, really the only way the NBA could come back would likely be if they were testing. And this was just him speculating. He wasn't reporting anything. But if they tested every single player before games, after games, and, you know, it becomes a ton of tests. And that's where I said, if it's just to play basketball games, yeah, it would be a great distraction for everyone. And our lives revolve around basketball because it's our livelihood. But at the end of the day, it is just a luxury, and we don't need basketball when there's tons of people out there that don't have tests. So I agree with you. And that's why I think it's going to be unrealistic for the NBA to return even in a few months. I just think if you hear what the experts are saying, you know, there was the Imperial College report that like looked at all different simulations and how this could go. It really does seem like we're going to be cooped up for months, and it doesn't seem like it's going to get any better. It's going to get worse before it gets better, essentially. So the question is, okay, do they wait until, I don't know, August to play games and then push back the start of next season? Or would it make more sense to just say, we don't know what's going to, you know, just start next season on time and just try to get things back to normal? You know, I think they would, if they could, I'm sure they would try to have a postseason and crown a champion, even if it delayed the start of next season a little bit. But the question is, at what point are you taking up too much of next season just to have a winner this year? And that's an answer that neither of us know the answer to. But what would you, I mean, if it was you, do you think the NBA would try to protect next season as much as possible?
Well, I think it was Steve Koonin of the Atlanta Hawks, one of the executives. I was at Sloan in Boston in what seems like, I don't know, 6 months ago. It was really like a couple weeks ago. And he said along the lines of, like, start basketball in August. I think that's what he was saying. Or was it finish basketball in August? No, start basketball in December around Christmas. Let it finish around August. Don't overlap with football as much, right? Because football, by the time December hits, it's down to, you know, a couple playoff games and then a week off and then Super Bowl. Let football have its time. Push the basketball season back. There's been a lot of talk of restructuring. You know, Adam Silver's been open beyond this crisis of just trying something new, doing things differently. Don't just stick to tradition that's been going on for 50, 60, 70 years, whatever it is, and do things just because it's what's been done, because we have a lot more education, we have a lot more technology, we have a lot more data and just information in general, and maybe there are better ways of doing things. And so, you know, from a salary cap perspective, this next season would be impacted. If we just go without a rewrite and an amendment and they fixing it, like the next cap would drop dramatically, and then players would be massively overpaid because there are several contracts. Everyone's contracts are based on the existing economy. So basically the players would make more than their 50% share. So then that would impact the next year, and the next year's cap would drop dramatically to kind of offset that. Like, there's all kinds of mechanisms in place to try to keep things equitable. And so you have all of these long-term problems. So I guess the point I'm saying is that what we're talking about right now is already not a one-season issue. It's not a this season and then, you know, really it's not even a one-season issue, right? It's how does this season finish, and then what is the impact on the salary cap? But it goes beyond that, because then it's the next year's salary cap that's impacted because the players are making more than their share. And then we're talking about, like, maybe this is like a six-year thing. It might take until 2024 is when the new CBA is scheduled to be rewritten anyway, or potentially rewritten, or there's an options, I think, in 2023. I may have the dates wrong, but there's so much that needs to be resolved just in that side of it. Maybe this is the opportunity. Maybe this is the time to say, okay, let's seriously consider pushing the NBA season back, because you may have to artificially change the dates of these contracts anyway, just for this one summer. Because normally they end June 30th, or not normally, like forever, they end at the end of June. And when they roll over into July, that's when free agency starts. The league and the union would have to agree that all contracts roll over at a later date, which is pretty significant. So there are so many factors like that that are in play now, potentially. Maybe this is the opportune time where the NBA always starts now in December, and it always ends in August, and it's no longer the summer league, it's the fall league, and everything that we do, the draft, everything is changed. And, you know, maybe the draft happens in June anyway, and maybe it happens, you know, there are so many, Adam Silver's open to all conversations. Maybe it happens in the middle of the season, and it's no longer a big trading day, or maybe it's happens in the summer. And now teams have a lot more time to get to know these college prospects, but then these college prospects go from April, and I guess they finish in March, and now they don't play until December. So, you know, but I guess they're not playing until October. It's only a couple months more. So, you know, we could go down every rabbit hole. Maybe this is time to implement major sweeping change because we're sort of pushed into it.
Yeah, I mean, we saw the NBA season start in December and the lockout shortened year. So, and I think a lot of people enjoyed that. So, yeah, we'll see. It's going to be really interesting to see what comes of this. Last thing for you, you just mentioned the draft. So when I talked to different agents, they were kind of wondering, are there going to be zero draft workouts? And then we're going to hold the draft where teams just basically go off only interviews and their college footage, with free agency. When is that going to happen? These are things that are all up in the air. I know there are some of the questions that you mentioned that you have still. So we don't really know the answer to these things, but you know, I just, like we said, you know, I have, our event is tied to the Pro Basketball Combine, and they're not sure if they're going to be able to do that. Because again, at that combine, you have representatives from 25 plus teams. You know, there's 40 veteran players, 24 college prospects. There's much more than 50 people in that gathering. So unless things drastically change between now and the end of May, and May is really when a lot of these draft workouts and the combine and all that stuff happens. So it seems like unless they push the draft back and push the pre-draft process back, we're going to have a very different draft process where teams may be having to make these decisions based on interviews that are done either over the phone or over video conferencing, and then just the college film alone, which is crazy because the pre-draft workouts are so, they impact the draft stock a lot, and guys can really help themselves. Some guys hurt themselves. It's going to be super interesting. But what are you kind of looking at when you look at free agency moving and the draft moving? Are there any things that you're anticipating or hearing? Because I'm not sure how it would work. That's another wrinkle we throw in. We talk about, you know, moving, you know, the season back and then starting next season a little bit later. But the fact that the NBA, there's no real offseason with the draft and free agency and all that, that just further complicates things in my mind.
Yep. It's all a mess. And when it's one thing to be drafting 30 players as second round picks, because there's no rookie scale for second rounders. But for the top 30 picks, you're locked into two full years, some of them at very expensive rates. Especially the top, you know, the lottery, especially the top five, top 10. And then, yeah, you can always opt out later, but draft picks are currency and they're so valuable, and that teams would have to go into them, not blind, but pretty darn close to blind, certainly diminished, you know, information. They don't have the usual, workouts and education, meetings, interviews, second workouts. There's so many processes that each team has to make sure they make good picks and smart picks. And some teams are better at it than others. Some teams are bad at it. It's a different point. you know, some teams may end up better off, like not knowing and just picking randomly because they've been pretty bad at it for many, many years.
They won't overthink it.
Right. But yeah, so we're talking about potentially a delay because the draft, as it is now, is one of the biggest trading days of the year, if not the biggest. There's the trade deadline and the draft, and they're pretty close to equal. I haven't run an analysis to see which has higher volume. You could even argue, I think the draft may have more trades than the draft at this point. There's than trade deadline, probably because there are a lot of small trades that are like pick swaps and, you know, changing positions, and some of them are very small.
Right.
But in volume, it might be the biggest trading day of the year. And you're trading off of the current year's salaries before they roll over to July. And then also sometimes at the draft, deals are made that bridge that post-draft time. So there'll be deals that are agreed to that can't be executed till after the moratorium in July. That's really common, quite common. There were this last year, there was a string of probably like a dozen trades or eight trades or something crazy that were all dependent. Like everything, like Andre Iguodala to Memphis had to happen to create the trade exception that helped make, like, there were so many things. Actually, it had to get that's what got the Warriors out of the hard cap so that they could do the sign-in trades for KD / D'Angelo Russell. And, like, then you think about all the other moves that were made along the way. A lot of that is worked out around the draft. And so they have to decide, you know, when's free agency going to be? Are you going to hold the draft in June but not finish the season until maybe, I don't know, August? And what happens to the numbers? You can't make those draft day trades. You can't make trades if your team still has active players. So for instance, once the regular season ends, any team that is out of the playoffs can make trades immediately if they want to. It's rare, but they do on occasion. And then as your team gets knocked out of the playoffs, you can make trades, but the two teams that make it to the finals can't make trades up until really, you know, within a week of the draft is usually when the finals ends. So if everybody still has active teams, if the season isn't canceled and the draft is supposed to be held, it just changes how things are. And that's not necessarily bad, but there's a way teams operate. And now they have to operate extremely differently, drastically differently. You're taking away the biggest trading day of the year. Maybe it just makes a lot more sense to push the draft back, give teams time to work out players, and maybe there are, you know, again, maybe in 3 to 6 months, 4 months, 2 months, I don't know, some point we can all have public gatherings again. And I think the NBA has to be open to that. I think the union has to be open to that. And all these decisions are made on the best information that you have when the decision needs to be made. So we don't have great information yet, and the decisions don't need to be made yet. So I think both will be pushed off until there's more information. And until there are deadlines that are fixed that we have to decide by, obviously you have to decide before the draft, right? You have to decide by certain key moments, the draft lottery, right? That's a key date. We have to decide by the draft lottery, which is in May. What a mess. What a mess.
It really is. Well, this is all crazy. But I'm glad you joined me, because I really did learn a lot from this conversation. I really appreciate it. You obviously know the CBA so much better than I do. So thank you for explaining some of these things to me and introducing some possibilities. I really appreciate it. And I'm going to be following you on Twitter, and I have notifications turned on. I'm looking for updates whenever there's announcements from the NBA or things like that. I know you're going to be all over it. Everyone else, make sure you're following Eric on Twitter at Eric Pincus. Read his work at Bleacher Report, at Basketball Insiders. He does a fantastic job, and as you can tell from this conversation, he's very smart and knows a lot about this stuff. So make sure you stay up to date on all of his updates. And Eric, thank you so much. I know this is a crazy time, and I know you're at home with your family, but so thank you for doing this. Thanks for joining me. I really appreciate it.
No, I don't mind at all. And I already worked out of home. I just also worked out of Staples Center quite a bit of my time. So it's an adjustment. It's crazy. But, you know, I was around Donovan Mitchell. I walked by KD just a week ago.
Oh, no.
So
yeah.
I'm not going outside anytime soon. So, you know, so far so good, though. And everyone stay safe. It's just it's a challenge on everyone. I know we're all going through it. So at least we can all sort of feel that together. Just try to stay as healthy as possible.
Absolutely. Stay safe. Wash your hands. Practice social distancing. And if you guys want to keep updated on what's happening with the NBA, make sure you're following Eric on Twitter at Eric Pincus. Check back on HoopsHype. We're going to keep updating the rumors page with any kind of updates about the league and where things go from here. And if you want to listen to more episodes of the HoopsHype podcast, check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere your favorite podcasts are found. And until next time, thanks for listening.